You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Hello there, Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea on this Monday. Obviously, we're going to want to hear from you at 216-578-0850. The Browns drop another one. They lose another quarterback, 31-17 to the Cincinnati Bengals. The Browns now 0-7 on the season, and they've played six different quarterbacks. Cody Kessler, hopefully we'll have an update for you on him later today, knocked out with a concussion. Kevin Hogan, what you gonna do, brother? Comes in, runs for over 100 yards. That's a positive. Put together a touchdown drive, but ultimately this was a game that felt a lot to me like last year. This felt a lot like one of those Jim O'Neill games where the team did not stop the run.
On defense.
You gave up anything and everything. 271 yards rushing they gave up to the Cincinnati Bengals. 559 yards of total offense, 9.2 yards per play.
Yeah, and you know what,
average.
And what else stands out to me, you go into the game without your number one corner, Joe Hayden, with another groin injury, which is very disappointing. A.J. Green, 8 targets, 8 receptions, 169 yards and a touchdown, including the 48-yard Hail Mary just before half, which I think was a backbreaker.
That was a backbreaker, and we'll talk about some of the turning points in this game. But again, for the Browns, if you're looking at it, you got Cody Kessler in there, 9 of 11 for 82 yards, efficient, good, makes a nice play on third down, gets hit, whacked, he's out of the game. Now, the Browns were able to finish that drive with Kevin Hogan coming in for the touchdown. They were up 10-7 at that point. Probably should have gone into the half down 14-10, but that Hail Mary to A.J. Green, that makes it 21-10. The Browns come out, and Kevin Hogan actually comes out and leads them on a touchdown drive to start the second half.
Well, here's the thing. Again, it goes back to taking care of your business, and you know the Browns won the toss and deferred. So they set their defense out first, didn't get off to the greatest start as they got a touchdown on the opening drive, which is what? One of your keys to the game on Browns countdown was, and it pretty much was all week, and yet, you're in a heavyweight fight in your division. You're punching them. They're punching you back. You're eating their blows, so on and so forth. And as you mentioned, you go into the halftime 14-10. You did your best to try to get a score before the half. Unfortunately, Cincinnati gets the football back. They make a couple throws. Then they throw have the penalty. And basically, we're thinking, they might take, I think, 6 seconds left on the clock. They're going to take, a 10-yard speed out, which would take 4, maybe 5 seconds. They'll have 1 second left. 1 second left and have Nugent, who didn't have his best day, kick a 50-plus yard field goal. And you go in 17-10, but you get ball at half.
Yeah.
And they throw the Hail Mary. You get the touchdown. And yet the whole key to me is you defer to be able to have that heavyweight type of fight in the first half and be able to go make – some of your adjustments at halftime, defensively, stopping the run, offensively, getting Kevin Hogan ready to play at halftime, a lot of coaching up to come out and go get a score right after half.
And they did get that score right after half. And so at worst, the Browns could have been up 17-14, could have been 17-17, said they were down 21-17. And then really the wheels fell off. Listen to the possessions by the Bengals in that second half. And by the way, they missed 2 field goals as well. So they did help the Browns in that regard. But here were their possessions on the day. 7 plays for 85 yards, touchdown. 12 plays for 56 yards, missed a field goal. One three and out for the Browns at the end of the and they got a punt in the second quarter. Then 5 for 80, touchdown. 7 for 85, touchdown. 2 for 75, touchdown. 7 for 66, field goal. 13 for 69, missed field goal. And then it was basically the end of the game. They're just trying to run the clock out at that point. But, you had Jeremy Hill run the ball 9 times. For 168 yards and a touchdown.
18-7 a rip.
Bernard, 17 carries for 80 yards.
6 yards a rip.
A.J. Green, 8 catches for 169 and a touchdown on 8 targets. LaFell, 4 catches for 83 and a touchdown on 5 targets. Dalton on the day threw for 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. And, yes, were there any bright spots on the defense? I mean, it's hard to say that there were, especially when you felt that they could run like at will. We saw it with Nate Orchard a couple of years ago, but it seems for Emmanuel Ogba getting that first sack opened the floodgates. He had 2 more in this one. Nassib and Kirksey had a half a sack. 9 tackles for Kirksey in the game. 1.5 for loss. Those 3 guys stood out, but other than that, it was rough going on the defensive side of the football for the Cleveland Browns, and this was one of those games that you went back to. Now, going into it, You and I talked about it on air, off air. I said, this is a game where I think we could have problems. And I talked about this issue too. What is going on with this defense right out of the gate? Something must be so predictable about what Ray Horton calls on the first series of games, because you go back now. You have to go back to the Miami game for a team that didn't score on their opening drive. Miami scored on their second drive, though. Washington scored on the first two drives. New England scored on the first three drives. Tennessee scored on their opening drive. And now you had the Cincinnati Bengals who scored on their opening drive and would have scored again on their second drive, but they missed a field goal. What is going on with this defense at the beginning of these games that it is just so easy for teams to walk down the field and score? Now, seven games, the team has scored on the opening drive, five of the seven. They scored on one of the first two drives, six of the seven games.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know, again, without diving into the room and really scouring and understanding what we're doing and what calls we're making in that first drive of the game, some of that has to be on the players. There's just, for a team that we've talked about being so hungry and working so hard to get that win, there's not enough urgency to come out and get off the field.
No, and look, at the end of this game, when the game was really, for all intents and purposes, over and out of doubt, and they were running right down the throat, Bernard ripped off 26 yards on two consecutive runs. Hugh Jackson called timeout and said, we got to play here. We got to play. And a lot's being made of what happened after that. He took his headset off, didn't put it back on for the rest of the game. But that was the first time that I think anybody saw a potential break. That it was just like they'd finally reached that critical mass of like, the weight of this losing streak seemed big for this football team. And they're going to get back in here and they're going to get to work. They have an opportunity to beat the Jets at home this week. But this was a tough game, and it was a game, honestly, going into it, I thought the Browns were going to have a tough time. Because you don't have an answer for A.J. Green.
No.
And A.J. Green did whatever he wanted to. Their front was good, although I thought the run blocking was good. Isaiah Crowell, 12 carries for 63 yards. Hogan ran for 104, many of which were on design runs.
You're absolutely right. The one thing that you did well as an offensive front, and it wasn't like Washington where the holes were gaping. What you did was you got a hat on a hat, which is all you have to do sometimes when you have great runners like Crowell. You saw he had to put the brakes on one time when a play was supposed to go left, and he went cut back right, and then put that other foot in the ground and went vertical for, you know, a 15, 20-yard run. Kevin Hogan, it was underestimated the type of athlete that he was, and I think that zone read is something – that zone read to the Cincinnati Bengals was the equivalent of a college team playing Navy.
Right.
You know – when you don't expect – well, I mean, and again, in that case, they weren't prepared for it, and I thought that's why it was very efficient. And I, who would you want to stop, Isaiah Crowell and what he's capable of doing, or Kevin Hogan, a fifth-round draft pick cut by one team, a backup quarterback in a limited offense?
Kevin Hogan.
No, you're going to stop Isaiah Crowell.
Oh, I would be less worried about
Kevin
Hogan.
So yes. You want to stop Isaiah Crowell, and I think that's where Burfict and Dansby and Ray Maluga, they were all flowing to Isaiah Crowell. You saw the defensive ends getting in their gaps and crashing down, which made it a very easy read for Hogan. And I thought it was one of those situations where it's not like we were getting breaks, but it was their ability to not stop the quarterback run with Hogan. We were creating our own breaks. Sure. We were making those plays, and we were doing enough to get out of a hole sometimes after Cincinnati scored, and we'd move the ball to, you know, at around the 50, and then it's any man's game. You make one throw, you know, one catch, and boom, you're down there in the red zone, and then you're cooking, you know. But the one thing that I constantly say, and I thought this wasn't my mindset when we went from RG3 to Josh McCown, but I thought it was, and I believed it to be true when we went from McCown to Kessler, then Kessler to Whitehurst, and then, you know, TP at the end of the Patriots game, and in this case, you know, to Kevin Hogan, is Hugh Jackson has to have he's got to have handcuffs on when it comes to, you know, the small print on that huge play sheet has to become just a little box for him to call out of. And when we talk about the creativity of Hugh Jackson, and you saw, you know, the opening plays by the Browns and the opening plays by the Bengals with, you know, those exotic wide formations and different things, those are the fun little wrinkles that you can add. But when you have a guy who got limited reps all week, but yet was still taking scout team reps in Kevin Hogan against your defense, because Cody Kessler was your starter, how, even being here for multiple weeks, he's not all that comfortable with this offense. You know, does he know the play in his head to be able to recite it to his team in the huddle? Yes. Sure. Does he know what Hugh Jackson's asking for on the football field? Yes. Has he seen Kessler, McCown, or RG3 run that play on film and in practice? Yes, getting those mental reps. But you practice for a reason, and it's getting those reps and learning from your own mistakes or your own shortcomings on a certain play, you know, where the ball placement, you know, a certain shift or a certain motion, or reading a certain defense and seeing it happen in front of your face. There's something to be said for. That's why the hours and hours are put into this, that you just can't replicate and expect a guy to come off the bench and run hot and be able to deliver the football the way the starter does.
No, and it's, again, to me, what was so interesting about this game is Terrell Pryor clearly wasn't himself. You didn't have him. They still were able to put some points on, but you're right. They're handcuffed in what they're able to do. They are limited in terms of, you know, exactly the options that are out there for them. I thought when you looked at it, all things considered, all said and done, offensively a better performance than you would have expected given it. I will also say this, and it was very apparent to me on the field when I was down there, it was very apparent to me that this offensive line performed better in the second half when John Greco slid to center. I thought Spencer Drango had a good accounting of himself for that whole game. Alvin Bailey came in. Cam Irving still struggles too much in the middle of the field. And that is the closest point to the quarterback. And I think it was one of the reasons that you get Cody Kessler knocked out of there. It's one of the reasons that there have been so many quarterback injuries. And I thought that the line did a better job once they made that move. Again, you're just looking – the reality of the situation is this Browns team not as talented as the teams they are playing. They're not executing as well as the teams they are playing. And when you add all of that up, it is difficult to win in the National Football League. Forget the fact that the Hail Mary. You can't let that happen. That
no.
cannot happen.
No.
And I know it happens, and it happens to good teams, and we've seen the Hail Marys be completed. I remember in the playoffs last year.
Seattle over the Packers a couple years ago.
Yeah, and you had the Packers on Arizona last year where they were able to – Jeff Janis, they completed that Hail Mary. But you can't let that stuff happen. When you're a team with no margin for error, you can't let that stuff happen. There were a couple plays there where the Browns had an opportunity. Ibrahim Campbell misses a tackle, and all of a sudden Jeremy Hill's got a 74-yard touchdown. Gave up too many big plays. That's been a theme for this defense all year. It was overall a poor performance. I think if you're looking for any bright spots, Cody Kessler played well again. But now you start to wonder, can you count on Cody Kessler to stay healthy?
And even furthermore,
5 games, he's been knocked out of 2 of them.
And something that has been, you know, solidified essentially on our radio show, on the Cleveland Browns radio network, about should Cody Kessler remain the starter for the length of the season? And I think the resounding message has been yes.
Yep.
Because of the strides that he's taken over the last 4 or 5 weeks and what he's shown to us, which nobody really believed based on his workload in training camp and in those preseason games. And now you're in a situation where Josh McCown's getting healthy. You've got, you know, a guy, Kevin Hogan. I mean, those guys are going to split reps because Cody Kessler's in concussion protocol.
To me, if Josh McCown is ready to play, Josh McCown gets to play.
Yeah.
Period. If he gets to play, if he's ready, that's it. So that's all. That's all. That's where I stand. If he's ready to play, you let him play. If he's not ready to play, that's something that we deal with, and then it looks like you might have to go with Hogan if Kessler's in the concussion protocol. But all in all, you loved. I thought the way that they competed. I thought Crow ran incredibly hard in this game.
He did.
And did a good job, averaged over 5 yards carry, but only got 12 carries. And it became apparent that they realized they could get pressure with 4 guys, or at least enough, and then drop back and force Hogan to throw the ball in the tight windows, and that's not what he's going to be able to do with wide receivers who at this point aren't getting separation. Other than Terrell Pryor, we do not have a receiver who consistently separates.
No.
And that's a big problem.
Right.
There are a lot of problems right now.
Yes.
0-7, it doesn't happen by accident, but there have been a lot of bad breaks in terms of injuries. But there are a lot of problems right now with this roster, and you need Corey Coleman back. I mean, you need Corey Coleman back in the worst way.
ASAP.
It changes everything to have Corey Coleman and Terrell Pryor out there healthy.
Yeah, because, again, for Kevin Hogan, Josh McCown, Cody Kessler, whoever's going to take the football and be under center for the Cleveland Browns, what we saw Cody Kessler do over the last 4 weeks and push the football to Terrell Pryor, you'd love to be able to do that to 2 guys.
Yeah.
And in a game like that, if you had Corey Coleman, knowing that Terrell Pryor, you know, was struggling with that hamstring injury on a limited basis. You get Terrell Pryor 4 to 5 targets. You get Corey Coleman 8 to 10 targets, and you let him carry that workload.
You can get both of those guys 8 to 10 targets and let's
yeah,
go.
But that's healthy. That's 100%. Terrell Pryor was not, so he's going to be on limited targets.
And you could tell that he wasn't. And you know, Ricardo Lewis and Hollywood Higgins had an opportunity, but you know, the truth is they're down to Kevin Hogan. How much do you expect? And he leaned predictably on Gary Barnage in this game. But Ricardo Lewis, 1 catch for 5 yards. Hollywood Higgins caught both of his targets every time they threw it to him, 2 for 19. But you only had one guy with more than 20 yards, 22 yards receiving in the whole game. And it just wasn't – it was not enough. It was not enough. And the Browns ultimately right now need to play mistake-free football. And giving up that Hail Mary, that was not mistake-free football. And I know there was frustration. I can tell you on the plane flight home, it was a very somber scene. It was just kind of like – I think that hurt Hugh Jackson to be in Cincinnati and to go through a game like that. I really think that hurt him at his core. And I don't know if – I think he handled it the best way that he knew how at that moment, which was I think he just wanted to get out of there. That was not anything that he enjoyed, and it wasn't good. I'm with him, too. I was there. 216-578-0850. Okay, here we are, 0-7. That's the reality of it. The guys are here. They're all working. They're back to work today. No Mondays off, obviously, for this team trying to get their first win. 216-578-0850. Where are you at with this Browns team? We'll get into this game a little bit more. You know, there were some bright spots, but for the most part, when you give up 271 yards rushing, there is not going to be anything positive to say about this game.
There's not
nearly 600 yards of total offense allowed to the Cincinnati Bengals in this one. All right, we'll be back with more CBD right after this.
Dalton turns and gives. Burkhead sweeps around the right side, out of a tackle, out of another tackle, and then he changes directions and goes over the 30-yard line, and that will do it for this round of the Battle of Ohio. An easy Bengal win.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Matt, got a question from Bobby Carr Jr. on Twitter, and he said, I get the deferring strategy, et cetera, but when you continually defer and then put yourself down 7-0, is deferring still the right strategy?
No, it's not. No, well, the hard part is, this is the mentality of a head coach. Deferring allows you to, as I mentioned in the first segment, to take the blows of the other team while also trying to deliver some of your own. You know, and at halftime, you've kind of, you understand the beast that you're playing against or what you're dealing with. You know, in our case, it was the quarterback position. To be able to coach up Kevin Hogan to come out and start fast in the second half. Because, you know, a lot of balls are in the air, per se, if you're juggling a lot for the Cleveland Browns, which it seems to me that we always are. But the reason why you want to receive for a lot of coaches is because, for whatever reason, we haven't started fast in the past. You've emphasized it all week, and there's something confident about your offensive plan that you want to go out there and execute and get that 3, that 7, or at worst, move the football, build some confidence with you know, offensively with whoever you have playing the quarterback position, and then at worst, you pin them deep and you force them to go, say, 90-plus yards on you.
Yeah, it's frustrating because this team is behind immediately every single game. Every single game. That's 4 in a row that the other team is taking the ball.
Yeah, it's like a handicap.
And score. It's like, oh, let's spot them 7 points.
Correct. It's defeating. And
so when you're in a locker room of a game like this, okay, or you're on the defensive side of the ball, and I don't know if you guys had any games like this in San Diego, which were complete defensive clunkers.
Of course we have.
What is the tone? What is happening? Does the head coach, especially if you come from a okay, you're in a pretty fair situation. You had an offensive head coach in Norv. If the defense completely just, you know, laid an egg, how is that handled?
Well, there's going to be games where, you know, the offense is going to lay an egg. That's the yin and the yang of the NFL football, where you rely those that have a good offense and a good defense, in most cases, are teams that are at the top of their divisions. You know, and there's going to be days where the defense has a clunker. There's going to be days where the offense can't get a first down, and the defense is on the football field a heck of a lot. And we've seen that going back to Philly, you know, when the time of possession was significantly in the favor of the Eagles. There's no conversations between players on the offensive side of the ball and the defense side of the ball, I wouldn't be surprised that there's probably not conversations between offensive coaches and defensive coaches unless it is brought on in a coaches meeting where Hugh Jackson sets the conversation and says, defensive coaches, we gotta XYZ because on offense we're trying to XYZ, whatever that case is, and vice versa. So yeah, there's active conversations on. And that's where I think the mentality for a coach to defer is all those conversations all week long. Like, Ray, how do you feel about the plan? Do you feel like you can go out there and get a stop? Coach, I feel like the guys are in a good place. We're going to go get that stop.
Yeah, but if 4 weeks in a row it happens at some point, are you not like,
bro, okay, stop getting angry at me. Okay? He walks by here all the time. Go ask him.
I'm not getting mad. I'm just saying.
I get it, but I'm trying to put yourself, you know, take you behind closed doors. Those are the conversations that are had.
Yeah.
It's, you know, we're starting Cody Kessler. You know, the Bengals got a really good front. I don't know what Marvin, and maybe because Hugh knew Marvin Lewis so well, that was the reason why we wanted to defer, because Cincinnati might not be a fast starting team, and that's something we maybe can go look at. You know, has Cincinnati done in their first six football games on their opening drive? If they're 0 for 6 deferring, you're a genius. But just not against the Cleveland Browns. You know, there's so many different factors that go into it instead of just going like, I always want to defer. No. If you've got a great plan and there's something you can exploit in, you know, offensively, you want to take the football, you want to go down and get points. Because just like that set a tone for the Bengals at home and who they are, it would have done the same thing for us on the road. That had the Bengals fans sitting on their hands and Marvin Lewis and that Andy Dalton offense going, well, we got to clap back. We got to get our own score.
Yeah, and I mean, the Browns offensively, now if it would have gone the other way, they went six and out and punted on their first, so they got near midfield. Then they got the field goal, then they got the touchdown, and they scored 10 points on their first three drives, which is certainly a good way to start the game. But it does get frustrating, and I think people, you know, it's a valid question, and I don't know what the right answer is. If, you know, I'm sure you're going to have things that say it's the right thing to do. I mean, you watch Bill Belichick, he defers every single time. I think he's probably studied this and is a pretty smart guy about it, so it makes sense that you can get that double dip. The other thing I wanted to say is, watching the offense yesterday, and I was watching this the following offense. Kevin Hogan at quarterback, Ricardo Lewis and Rashard Higgins at receiver with Andrew Hawkins. And I was thinking to myself, here we are in week 7, and you know what we were supposed to be watching? Robert Griffin III with Josh Gordon, Terrell Pryor, and Corey Coleman.
Gary Barnage, Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson.
And those guys are still there. But have just those changes, those four changes, changes the way that a defense feels about this Cleveland Browns offense significantly. It's not making excuses. I mean, there are plenty of teams that are without guys, and Josh Gordon wasn't injured. Corey Coleman has been injured. Now Pryor is injured. So you never know if you'd have them anyway. But that's what it was supposed to be.
Yep.
And that is what is, you know, obviously very hard to digest. Defensively, you had everybody you were supposed to have except for Joe Hayden. And, you know, the last 2 years, it hasn't been a huge loss.
Right. And to be very honest with you, defensively, if you were – and I know there's been a lot of turnover.
And Poyer.
Correct. There's been a lot of turnover defensively, but Joe Hayden has missed more games than he's played.
Yeah. It's been rough. Let's go to the phones now. Phil in Brecksville.
Guys. Hi, guys. Hey. Man, Nathan. You know, Nathan, the comment about this feels like last year, you know, just kind of rings true with me.
That was the Nathan, first time that I thought that at any point, by the way, was in just watching them run all over the Browns. That was the first time I thought that.
You know what, for me, when you know, when you started this, it's probably been 4 or 5 years. I know
For
about this time in the year, all we really thought about was that I almost felt helpless about not having a quarterback. I felt that yesterday. Second of all, you know, Matt, I remember Matt saying, Matt, I think last year, you just want to watch football. You just want to wait for that next game. And I'll tell you, when I was watching the game last night between the Seattle and the Cardinals, all I thought about was, man, this is football. And I had to wait till 8:30 to watch a professional football game when players were really playing. And you know what? I'm actually embarrassed, and I feel a little helpless for this team. The last point I'll make is that, you know, I watched the game with my daughters are 20, 30 and 27. I watched the game with their boyfriends. You know, guys, they're 30 years old and 27 years old. They could care less about the Browns. They do it because they want to watch the game with me. But this group, these young kids, you know, they've grown up with losing.
Yeah.
And honestly,
your Whiteners,
halfway through, Nathan, they were like, I'm going to the store. And I was like, well, where are you going? You know, they don't have that same allegiance that the Browns do. There's a real problem here.
There is a real problem, and now all of it is not, because when you think about that, and yes, you're losing. I think it is very possible that entire generation of people in the city of Cleveland that should be Browns fans, or not should be, they shouldn't have to be, but if the Browns were a better product, would be Browns fan, is going to be wiped out if it doesn't turn out. Now, that's not all on Sashi and Hugh. They just got here, and they're trying to undo 15 years of basically a very poor display. And it takes time. Clearly, it takes time. And it's going to be painful along this journey. But you're right. I mean, I work for the Browns. I go and I leave my kids, you know, 10 weekends a year for Browns games, counting the preseason. And they don't even want to watch. They feel like they know what's happening before I even come home. They don't care. I don't know if your kids are diehard, but my kids are not diehard Browns fans by any stretch of the imagination, even though I would love them to be.
My son is absolutely tuned in because, you know, he knows what I do. And he also, you know, Tank Carter and his kids are friends of my kids.
Sure.
So Mason's always looking forward to seeing Mr. Tank on TV. But, yeah, it's very quickly, though, be very honest with you, is because, and I've mentioned to you before, because of Crash Elites, you know, on Nickelodeon and Rob Gronkowski hosting that show. My son is a Patriots fan. He's a Rob Gronkowski fan first, but then wants the Patriots to win.
Yeah. And
is not disappointed very often by the Patriots.
No. And that's the thing, you know. I think there was a time when my kids were into it, and then it just got to be to the point where it was, you know, I think it was just a little bit too much. I thought that the coaching, and this goes back to it, I thought the coaching on the offensive side of the ball to get what they were able to get out of the offense down to Kevin Hogan, and even Kessler was 9 of 11 for 8 yards, was remarkable. I think that the coaching, it is on, especially on the offensive side of the ball, is fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what we're actually getting when you think about the fact that we were supposed to be out there with RG3, Josh Gordon, Terrell Pryor, and Corey Coleman.
And that's Hugh Jackson. And that's the disappointment. I mean, I think Hugh Jackson, if he did any history studying of the Cleveland Browns prior to taking this job, probably knew that everything wasn't going to go the way he wants it to go. But the amount of adversity that Hugh Jackson has had at this point through 7 football games is unfathomable in his mind of a script of a horror story. It's the script of a horror story if he had to write one going into this season. Based on what his expectation of his football team to look like.
It never even occurred to him he'd be on a 6th quarterback. Like, that wasn't even within the realm of possibility.
It's too bad. Stephen King couldn't write this.
That hasn't happened, I think, since the mid-70s. The Buccaneers, who were an expansion team, is the last time it happened. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more phone calls, more reaction. We'll get into this. The Browns reeling right now. 0-7 onto their 6th quarterback, Kevin Hogan, who finished that game against the Bengals.
Listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Dog Pound through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle. Lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games this year to make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone on the Browns mobile app or at kiosk locations. Don't miss the chance to support your Cleveland Browns foundations and shoes and clothes for kids. This is going to be a special one out there. They honor the 86 team. 30
yes.
guys will be back, including head coach Marty Schottenheimer.
Yes. So I'm looking forward to that.
I am too. Come on out to First Energy Stadium this Sunday and see that when the Browns take on the Jets. Back to the phones we go. Pat in Chesterland is with us. Pat, welcome.
Hi, guys. I heard Jimmy Donovan earlier this morning on the RBS show, and he made an interesting point, and it's kind of confirmed what I've been seeing. Is he said it was really troubling that this organization's first draft class seems to be made up of a bunch of just another guy, you know, guys that really aren't going to be long-term answers. And I'm really disappointed. I mean, they had 14 picks, and I think there's very little to show for it. Ogbo looks good.
Yep.
Nassib, you know, can he stay healthy? I mean, Corey Coleman, his first year, he lost most of training camp due to a hamstring injury. Now he's missed most of the season to a broken hand. I mean, it's even the few bright lights from this draft class can't seem to stay on the field.
So you look at this draft class so far, and this is what I would say. First of all, Cody Kessler's in that draft class. So I think Coleman, yes, has to stay healthy, but you can tell he's a premier talent. Ogba has been the most consistent guy on the field.
Played a lot of football, too.
Nassib, I think you can see that the talent is there, and he's been doing it now. He got a half a sack even with a club on his hand, which is not easy to play with. So that's three guys. I thought Spencer Drango started for you and did a very good job at guard. Could be a long-term starting offensive lineman, which is where you're supposed to get one of those guys in the fifth round. So that's four guys. Sean Coleman, I know that they are very high on. That's five. Cody Kessler, I think we could all agree, may not be the long-term answer at quarterback, but certainly is a guy that will be in your organization as a backup or a guy who can start for you at times and has played very, very well. So that's what? That's six.
Yep.
After that, Derek Kindred has shown some flashes, but also good and bad. Ricardo Lewis is still very much a work in progress. I don't know if Hollywood Higgins has the athleticism in the NFL to win week in and week out. Jordan Payton doesn't seem to be really a part of the program right now. Trey Caldwell still on the practice squad. I would say the other rookies that actually look pretty good are undrafted guys. You've got Dominique Alexander at linebacker. You've got Breann Body Calhoun, who's maybe been our best corner, which is scary. And then Tracy Howard, who's playing some at free safety now. So,
and was there, you know what, I know you you announced the inactives yesterday on Browns Countdown, and sometimes our interaction going back, you know, you just don't, we don't do it from a content standpoint. Is there a reason why you think Corey Lemonnier, was it just simply numbers that he was inactive yesterday?
Numbers
for depth at what, wide receiver maybe with prior limited?
Well, Payton had been active. So I think where it was in the secondary.
Okay.
Because Tracy Howard was active. You lost Marcus Burley and Joe Hayden. So they brought up that other corner from the practice squad. He was active. And then Ed Reynolds, who's a safety.
Yeah.
Was also active.
Okay.
So I think you had three extra DBs.
And sometimes, you know, with the turnover at the bottom of the roster, you see a name like Corey Lemonnier, who's made some plays, made the play in Miami, has been, you know, in our rotation on the defensive front, and then he pops up on the inactive list, and it can only be, you know, for a numbers reason. I just wasn't exactly sure, you know, being on television, exactly what position was fully in need.
Yeah, so I think that's what happened there. 216-578-0850. So I wouldn't say they're just – I don't think that that's a fair assessment of the draft class yet. I think if you come out of a draft and you have, I would say, let's call it four impact players. I think you could argue at this stage Kessler's an impact player. Nassib, Ogba, and Coleman.
Well, here's the thing. And I'm not I'm coming from a place of optimism, not from a place of pessimism. And, you know, because that's who I am right now. I'm committed to the Cleveland Browns. I'm committed to Hugh Jackson, Sashi Brown, sitting at this desk right now doing this radio show for 2 hours a day. Think about it like this, to put a little spin on it. And we've made this take before, okay? You accumulated picks. And, yes, you ended up with 14 draft picks. But most teams have seven. And maybe based on free agency, maybe eight or nine at most. You know, getting some compensatory picks as free agency, you know, looms for every good team. And guys naturally leave. You know, look at the Bengals. No Marvin Jones, no Mohamed Sanu. Compensatory picks came their way. What they did with them, we don't know. But you said five, you know, five of nine. You know, say we had nine picks. And I know we had 14. And a lot of them are, you know, third-day picks. But say we had nine.
The majority are more right. Later.
Correct. The majority of the picks that matter, the ones that you need to get right as we see right now, are guys that are playing a lot of football and are not the reasons why we're losing. I'll say that.
Yeah.
Okay? It's, you know, yeah, Corey Coleman can help. Having Corey Coleman wouldn't be the reason why we're – not having him isn't the reason why we lose, but not having him is the reason that, you know, it's not helping us. He's not helping us win. You know, Cody Kessler, a guy who wasn't supposed to play, is putting us in a situation, playing great football, putting us in a situation in a few games that we could possibly win. Carl Nassib, Emmanuel Ogba are learning on the run, playing a heck of a lot of snaps. You know, there's not any one play that you can go, Emmanuel Ogba, had he been in his gap or had he, you know, knocked that ball down or got that sack or this, he's the reason why we lost the football game. And you can say, going back 3 years, There were number one draft picks not performing that were some of the reasons why you lost games.
Right, I think you'd feel right now better about, you know, other than Danny Shelton from the last couple of years, but you feel better about Nassib and Ogba than any of those first round picks.
Yes.
And not that the bar was set high, because we all know that it wasn't. But I think when Corey Coleman's on the field, you can tell he's a difference maker. But he needs to get on the field. Missed some time that last year at Baylor. Missed some time already. We need Corey Coleman back. But I think some of the guys that were later picks, maybe they are turning out not to be just another guy. I don't think that's fair to say yet. They're early in their development. But I still think if you get, let's say that Drango and Coleman, one of them becomes a starter and a plus starter. I think you've gotten Coleman, Ogba, Nassib, Drango, or Coleman, four plus starters. And maybe from the rest of the group, you'll get maybe one more. And I think Kessler, you count him as a valuable asset to your organization no matter what he is, whether he's a starter or your backup.
Right.
So that's five or six guys. Most teams have seven picks in a draft. That means they'd have to bat 1,000 to get that kind of a turnover.
Right.
And the Browns, that's why they're doing what they're doing. Now, the real important draft's going to be coming up when you have 2 1s, 2 2s, and potentially more. I mean, who knows? And now all of a sudden there are reports out there about Joe Thomas and maybe Joe Hayden.
Again,
those are coming out. The deadline's November 1st, so we'll know that very soon. We'll know that basically 8 days from now. That's 8 days from now we'll know the fate there. Let's go to, I believe, is it Doug in Cleveland now? Doug, welcome to the show.
I just wanted to say, yesterday when I was watching the play, when the two receivers went in motion and the tight end went back in motion, I couldn't believe that they let them run that same play three times and scored a touchdown and gained like 40 yards on the second time they ran it. And also, I wanted to say,
about the counter runs?
Yes. How did they let them run that play? I seen that sitting at home, and I don't really know football like that. And also, I wanted to say, you know, I'm only 33 years old, man, but I love the Browns. So when you guys say that there's no young people that love the Browns, I'm not going to say I'm young. I mean, that's not true, because when they came back in 99, I was 16 years old, and I've watched every game every Sunday since then. I love the Browns, man. I couldn't see it the way I felt. Maybe because I really love the team, man. Sometimes that just bothers me when it's, a lot of young people who love the Browns, man.
Of course. But I meant the grade age range that I was talking about is like 0 to 16.
Yeah, but even – yeah, you're right. But even furthermore, and I'll be very honest, just, you know, seeing the sales staff, you know, here in Berea and being in, you know, in the guts of the business the way that we are up here in the Dog Bowl, and having gone to the stadium as well, the millennials are – there's a gap missing. And the reason why, you got to figure, even go back to a 16-year-old, right, who now was 16 when the Browns returned in 1999 – and look at, okay, and at this point, 17 seasons since then, they are now, what, 33 years old. They've got one winning season. Did we have a playoff appearance mixed in there or no?
One.
One. One winning season, two winning seasons, I'm sorry. One playoff appearance. And what else to hang your hat on over the course of 17 years? So that person is now 33 years old and fed up and tired. You know, and it's like the last thing he wants to do is spend his money here. I get it. It's frustrating. There's just got to be you've got to be one of those individuals that sees the plan and the process that Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown going down, and believe it, and have an utter joy for the game of football, and have brown and orange flowing through your veins.
You've got to, and it's certainly again. Obviously, it has been rough this year. Let's go to Tony in Canton now. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I had a concern, and I think Hugh Jackson, and I think a lot of them for doing it, he indirectly, by commenting Terrell Pryor about Joe Hayden. And I think it's about time that Joe Hayden gets put into the Joe Thomas category, because I just think he has no desire to get on the field. And I think that could be crippling to some of the younger players like Corey Coleman. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I mean, from all of my interactions with Joe Hayden, he certainly seems to be very much a competitor, a guy who wants to be out there, but it is getting troubling, the injuries. And I know a lot of people go back to the game in Cincinnati or in San Diego when he didn't play with a finger injury. And I think that a lot of people kind of were like,
correct.
Now he's had, you know, some significant injuries that obviously kept him out. I don't think, you know, I would never sit here and say I think Joe Haden is not playing when he's capable of playing. I would certainly hope that he gets out there and gets out there soon because the team needs him. But it is one of those situations where you want to see your leader out there and helping you out and setting that tone. And I do think that there was some type of a message from Hugh Jackson in those comments about Terrell Pryor.
Yes. And the reason why is because Hugh Jackson, I think, is very real. And I think his passion about winning and his belief in that this in the turnaround that he was going to do and the job that he and his coaches were going to do to have this football team ready to win football games with the guys that you listed off last segment and how different we sit right now through 7 weeks. He was prepped to go to battle with RG3 and Corey Coleman, and he understood probably who and what Terrell Pryor is and can do better than anybody. He watched the film on the 1,000-yard tight end in Gary Barnage. He had two running backs that he loved so much that he probably had a resounding message to Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry, Paul D. Podesta, that I don't need a running back. I got what I need. You know? And it is so utterly different for him.
Frustrating indeed, and I can tell from my Twitter right now, very frustrating. But there's some millennials, Glenn Fan and Monkey2Y Banana, he loves the Browns. And I think there are. I'm just talking kids. I'm talking kids that have grown up in the last 10 years or less that I've seen. I think it's tough, and, you know, it takes time. But I think when it turns around, it really will turn around as well. And I think really when you look at the job, if we're going to be honest about it, I know it's not fun to talk about what's going on with the Browns, but if you're being realistic, you're on your sixth quarterback, okay? You don't have the receivers that you were supposed to have. The fact that this offense is actually able to move the ball and score the ball is kind of remarkable that they're in the top half of the league.
Yes.
It's kind of mind-boggling, really.
It is.
Hugh Jackson's done a great job. I just want to get to the point where we've got that talent and we can actually see it unfold. Ed in Akron, welcome. What's up, Ed? Fontan, we still got Ed?
Kind of comments, yes, or questions that you guys can kind of pick and choose.
Sure.
On the 74-yard touchdown run, Cincinnati shifted from the left side over to the right side for an unbalanced line. Our defense shifted away from the strength of their formation. What is that coaching? Did they make a mistake? What was the reason for that?
That's a good question. I don't necessarily know, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And to be very honest with you, in some cases when a defense does that, they're coached to do that. But what you will see is, okay, say the line. So what happened? I'll go back. When you go to an unbalanced line, what you do is you shift one way. You go unbalanced right, unbalanced left. That is a call made by the linebackers for you to move a gap. Okay, so they shift the guy over, and for whatever particular front they were playing, they needed, and I'm not saying it was right, but they shifted weak, probably to get back to their gap in some cases, right? But what didn't happen and must happen to defend that, to even have a chance at defending it, is you need your linebackers to then boss over to the strong side. And that means DeMario Davis gets one gap closer, you know, to that overload, and Christian Kirksey moves from his weak gap to a, you know, the next strong gap to the front side as well. Because if you don't, and this is exactly what happened, is you just create a short corner. They've got their bigs with angles blocking back on us, and we're defeated immediately already, and they've created a crease. And then as we fit, they get big blocker guard, big blocker backside tackle coming across, and then they motion their receiver across. I think it was Brandon LaFell, and he cuts that backside end. And the one thing that I'll – and I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. You can watch the film and see it for yourself. I think Christian Kirksey's ability to run through early in the football game and make that tackle for a loss, that's a really good feeling. And muscle memory and successful memories have a tendency to create habits. And on a play like that, where Christian Kirksey was on the weak side, was the weak side linebacker, where you were short hats, meaning we did shift our line left and we didn't technically boss over. And so we are, from a numbers game, if you split the center down the middle, they have more hats than we do, and they create even more hats when they bring over that guard and tackle to pull. So we have, say, five hats to their six. And what Christian Kirksey does, Christian Kirksey, because he had made the play earlier, run through and made a play for a tackle for a loss, runs through the backside and gets chipped off by one of the guard, one of the back blocks.
But he was still behind. He would have been behind the play anyway.
But it would have created a vice tackle. All you need in that situation to survive that down is Jeremy Hill to stutter his feet in the hole, and Christian Kirksey then makes up that ground coming over the top, skating like a linebacker should, and makes a play for a 7-yard gain. As we did when they ran the play multiple times thereafter, it still was successful, but it went for six yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, 5 yards, not 74 yards. So, I mean, if he stutters his feet, Ibrahim Campbell might not miss with a better angle, and or he could get a vice tackle between Christian Kirksey and Ibrahim Campbell as well, right there in the hole. So it's one of those things where, and my gosh, coming from college, and I know Christian Kirksey's in his third year, but coming from college at Ohio State, man, I loved running through and make tackles for losses against bad football teams because their linemen weren't good enough to understand what was happening and where they couldn't peel off and block me or chip me and knock me off. So I'd run through and make plays. I tried it in the NFL until I got waylaid a few times and realizing, you know, and then coached to not run through the backside anymore. So I had to skate over top, and sure as heck, I'm making a bunch of tackles for a 3-4 yard gain, which is, you know, survivable in the National Football League.
So I'm watching the play right now just to try to give a little bit of insight on it. So when people say that we shifted away from it, when they came out in their initial formation, Cam Johnson was on what ended up being the strong side. So he was at where the left defensive, he was outside the left defensive end, and then went to the right side. When they shifted, he went back to the left. So the linemen themselves stayed where they were, but they moved Cam Johnson back over to that side. So he did address the strong side of it. I think the guy that when you watch this play, that Campbell took a horrible angle and missed, and that's been a problem, some of the angles. And the other part of it is you had DeMario Davis coming over the top. Kirksey tries to shoot the hole, which makes sense. The guy that really could have come up there because DeMario Davis takes on the blocker that could have made the tackle is Tremon Williams.
Right.
And he didn't really get in there.
Correct.
And then it was pretty much off to the races.
Sure.
Yeah, obviously a rough one there. We got time for one more call here. I believe we've got one more call. We've got Lewis in Shaker. Lewis.
We got to get – okay, you know what? I'm strength and conditioning coach. We got to get stronger, and we got to get bigger. I mean, did Cam Irving come in this year stronger than he was last year?
Probably I don't not. Know. The one thing that's going to blow your mind is the year that Cam Irving came out, he was fifth among all offensive linemen at the combine in bench press. So he's got strength, but it's functional strength.
What did
it's
he
technique
bench press?
And leverage. 31
what did
reps.
He bench press?
31 reps.
Of what?
225.
Of what? 225?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm 53 years old. I can bench press 25 reps of 225. That's not saying a lot for him. When I was in college, I seen a guy, our
he's
center,
fifth best amongst all
at
the linemen
university
at the combine.
At half the university, come in and bench press 500 pounds, and I'm not lying. You put 500 pounds on the bar bends, and he's a lineman. Yesterday, you could tell we just got dominated. We got dominated physically on the offensive line and defensive line. Anytime a running back rips off 9 yards per carry, they're dominating us. It's just physical. Even when they line up, you know, our DB lines up next to A.J. Green, you can tell A.J. Green is much bigger than our DB, much stronger.
Sure.
We got to get bigger. These puppies, and I call them puppies because they're learning right now, but as they mature, also, we got to get them stronger. We got to get them bigger. I mean, you know, sometimes when you go to make a tackle and you know that you're not bigger than this guy, you kind of hesitate. You kind of not really want to tackle this guy. When that guy ripped off that 74-yard run and he dove at his feet, that's one of my examples. He didn't really want to tackle him. I'll make the effort so it'll look like it, but I know that this cat's going to run me over. So we got to get bigger. As you get bigger, that fear decreases. You know, you'll go in there and pop somebody. But if you're 185 pounds, 190 DB, you're only bench pressing, I'm just going to throw this out there, 275, and you got a back coming in full speed at 240, through that hole, you're not going to want to tackle him.
Right, and I think even furthermore, there's a mentality about being that guy. And I think there's defensive backs in the league that take pride in being great tacklers. Joe Hayden's one of those guys. We were without him, and that hurts our defense. So not only, I mean, getting bigger sometimes is easier said than done, and I think everybody's lifting weights, right? Everybody's trying to get bigger, faster, stronger, but it's the mentality that you take into that football game. And is your coach, in this case, going to say anything about you not being physical, but yet you're preaching of being a physical defense?
Right.
So if who you are as a football player, and in some cases, I'll just name Tremont Williams in this case, because he's the guy that you said didn't step up there and play so overly physical. If he has not been asked to be overly physical in any year of his career, he's not going to do it now. Just because Ray Horton's barking up his tree, he might throw his head in there every once in a while, but in a DB, and especially a corner. I mean, safeties like to hit. Derek Kinder likes to hit somebody, but corners in general are the prima donnas on the football field. It's
they're
like
paid to cover.
They're always the they're guy that they're paid to cover. They're always the guys running in there on their heels, you know, ready to like, you know, throw this like baby shoulder into the back of a guy that's already down and try to get an assist.
Sure.
That's just, they're just creatures of habit. That's just who they are.
Yes. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Jim Donovan will be with us, let you know where he stands. I know you guys, some of you heard him earlier today. We will talk with him when we return on CBD.